Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives. So saith James Madison, a man who knew a whole lot about power and politics and had a lot of knowledge as well. And you are here on the Power Hour, in which we're gonna hopefully communicate some knowledge. We're gonna relieve some ignorance, perhaps. We're gonna equip you with a lot of power. I'm Pete Hendrickson. I am very pleased to be guest hosting the next 2 hours of the Power Hour. I thank Daniel Brigman and Catherine Russell, and certainly looking back, Joyce Riley, for the opportunity to do so. I got a lot to cover today. Primarily, we're going to end up focusing on the question of the income tax, this being the nominal tax day this year. But before I get to that topic, and somewhat to sort of lead up to it, I want to cover a few things in the news over the course of the last week that I think are worthy of attention. Most prominently, at least first on my list today, is the issue of the new guidance for masking and social distancing and other purported COVID-19 mitigation measures that we were given, handed down from on high last Tuesday or Wednesday, in which basically the CDC said anyone who's been fully vaccinated can take off the masks and stop the social distancing and do all of the things that any rational person would have assumed to be, you know, automatic with the receipt of what is claimed to be a complete, basically 100% protection vaccine. Why on earth would anyone need to continue to protect themselves from the introduction of a virus that they are now armed for bear against with that vaccine? And this has been obvious for months and months. But for political reasons, I'm suspecting, the mask mandates and social distancing and all the rest remained in place until it reached the point where perhaps the Biden administration recognized that the economy could not sustain continued shutdown and the continued ill effects of these various mandates, and just had to bite the bullet and face those facts. And so we've had this relaxation, but this new guidance, which, you know, it's not, the CDC's does not issue laws. It's not authorized to do that. It's just, these are just recommendations that it makes. Unfortunately, most of the country has treated them as gospel and abided by them, much to the harm of many, many people. If you understand anything about the nature of immune systems, being masked up and distancing yourself from other people is the worst thing you can do for the health of your immune system. And if anything, we have rendered ourselves, or many, many folks in America have rendered themselves highly vulnerable to a lot of pathogens that we're probably going to see some meaningful effect of that now when the masks come off and the distancing stops. And I kind of hate to say that, because that needs to happen real badly, and in fact, I think it's happening about as fast as people can yank those chin bibs from their faces and throw them in the trash. But we will perhaps see some effects of the immune system damage that's taken place over the last year. Nonetheless, so these are not laws; they're just guidance. They purport to relieve only vaccinated people from the directives to wear the masks and practice social distancing, but just as much as, you know, that turning on a dime one day last week, in the face of no new research, no new data, no new reason or rationale for making the change, the CDC nonetheless in 24 hours went from, you know, telling everyone to mask and to, you know, hold the kids back from social activities this summer and all those things to, hey, you know what, never mind, just kidding. Do what you want. Just as that has revealed that there's no science involved in any of this stuff, because that was not a scientific decision. That was not a decision based on any reasoning. It was pure politics. There's no rational distinction to be drawn between vaccinated and unvaccinated people in regard to these policies for which only vaccinated people have supposedly been relieved. I really think that it's kind of a moot issue, I will admit, because as I said a moment ago, everybody is abandoning these masks and so forth as quickly as possible. Further, any business that attempts to require proof of vaccine, which they are still being, you know, that's still being tolerated officially, any business that attempts to require that proof of vaccine for any reason is going to be the exception. And it's going to be punished to the point of ruination by the marketplace. No one is going to choose to go to the creepy place demanding to see your papers for entry when a more respectful competitor is just down the street. So I don't think that any of the businesses that might be tempted to you know, try and distinguish between who's vaccinated and who's not vaccinated of people who are walking into their store without a mask on, I don't think that's going to last very long at all. And I don't think anyone's going to be keeping the masks on. So it's perhaps a moot issue or a moot subject to be too concerned with the distinction that is being attempted by the CDC and the state governments, which are, you know, still clinging to whatever the CDC says as the content of their own edicts to their populations. But still, I think until the idea of public health as a viable pretext for tyranny has been completely excised from the American consciousness, the same sort of thing remains a threat going forward. You know, we don't know next year that you know, some pretext is going to be seized upon and hypnotically chanted in the media as COVID-19 was last year. To the point of being used as a justification for yet another series of lockdowns or any other impositions for which no authority has actually been given to any of these governments. This can still happen. So until the idea that public health is not a valid pretext for these edicts and for you know, the kind of control over individuals that has been being practiced for the last year, I think it's worth going over some basic points on who has a public health duty to whom and who does not, so as to try and get back ahead of the curve on that one before we face this again. In that respect, I want to share a few more words of James Madison. That are relevant to this. He said, "It is proper to take alarm at the first experiment on our liberties. We hold this prudent jealousy to be the first duty of citizens and one of the noblest characteristics of the late revolution. The free men of America did not wait till usurped power had strengthened itself by exercise and entangled the question in precedents. They saw all the consequences in the principle, and they avoided the consequence by denying the principle." Pretty simple wisdom. When we don't need to debate tyrannical diktats from governments that have not been authorized to issue them. We don't need to debate whether they're a good idea or a bad idea or anything else about it. If they're not authorized, they're not authorized. They're invalid. They're purely and simply invalid. And we need to respond that way when these things happen. We didn't do this in March of 2020, and as a consequence, we saw just a ruination of much of this country. We saw the destruction of the economy. We saw horrendous death tolls from the effects of the isolation and other bad aspects of the lockdown process. Probably a lot of deaths taking place because of people staying out of the hospitals due to the fear that was generated of hospitals as COVID-19 petri dishes and many other ill effects. And we should have rejected the principle right off the bat. We should have said, pure and simple, state does not have the authority to do these things. Public health is not a legitimate pretext for the exercise of undelegated powers, and so we're not gonna tolerate it. We're gonna reject that. That's what Madison advocated, and it's what we should have done. Unfortunately, we didn't. We let ourselves be victimized by more than a year of experiments on our liberties without any denial of the principle to speak of. A little bit here and there, you know, some people protested and what have you. Very, very, very few people simply refused to comply and took the matter, you know, as far as it ought to have gone. But we need to recover that ground. So here are some thoughts on the issue of the vaccination, vaccinated versus non-vaccinated, and the distinction being drawn by the CDC in this effort to cling to a failed, an invalid, an improper assertion of power. Because it's not up to them who puts a mask on and who doesn't put a mask on. But they're trying to draw this distinction. Here's the thing. The only plausible pretext for the for the imposition of masking and social distancing practices on anyone in the first place was the proposition that without those mandates, some folks would sicken others through no fault of the one so sickened. In other words, everybody walking around amongst other people would be at risk of catching something from some thoughtless or maybe even unknowing carrier of the loathsome disease, and therefore everybody had to be stopped from walking around amongst other people or doing so without equipment in place that would prevent them from, you know, prevent their air from being shared. That was the prospect. That was the object. There's a certain superficial plausibility to that. To that argument, I think it fails on any kind of in-depth analysis. But at a first glance basis, and in a first instance basis, when panic is high and there are unknowns involved and so forth, it's kind of plausible. You know, quarantine everybody was the notion, and that'll stop it. You know, stop the thing from spreading from one person to another. But it's always really been a bogus argument. There was never any valid reason for assuming that anyone out in public was infectious. And since anyone could ensure his or her own safety by simply gearing up with enough personal protection equipment, they needn't. There's no reason for there to be a duty on anybody to preemptively protect those other people by wearing their own personal protective equipment, which is to say cocooning themselves and in order to not share air with others. But again, that was the argument that was used. However, as soon as a vaccine became available, and I'm going to put vaccine in quotes because while I don't want to get into it today, it is important, I think, for people to understand that what's being called a vaccine isn't really a vaccine in the conventional sense of the word. It is not a sample dose of the pathogen that your body is to create an immune defense against. It's actually a genetic instruction to your body to produce one of the things against which you are hoping to become protected, which is to say the spike protein that is associated with the coronavirus. And the idea is that when your body produces these things internally, rather than in lieu of the vaccine actually introducing these items, your body's going to produce them, and your immune system is going to generate an immune response. Why they couldn't come up with the actual spike protein or the actual virus to inject as the vaccine, which would be a normal and proper vaccine, that's anyone's question. It's an interesting question, I think. Nonetheless, that's not what we have here. The Moderna and Pfizer products in particular, I'm sure the AstraZeneca one as well, they're just messenger RNA items that instruct your body to produce these, you know, pathogenic components in the expectation, again, that your immune system will react to them. Once your cells put them out into the system, your immune system will react by creating antibodies and destroying them. This causes some people to get sick, of course, when these injections are made, because these people's own, their own bodies are producing a heavy dose of a very harmful item that attacks the vascular system in particular. And that as compared to just, you know, being out in normal a communion with other people in which you might encounter someone that is carrying and shedding some of the virus, in which case you'll get a little bit of it in you. Your system will crank out antibodies in a lightning-like reaction and kill it all. And you will then have complete protection against the pathogen, the COVID-19, and any variants going forward for likely the rest of your life. Better solution, in my opinion, and a lot less likely to get you sick. But in any event, that's what we have for a vaccine. And as soon as one became available and began and was touted as being a effective high-grade protection against COVID-19, the duty to others pretext on which you being asked to wear a mask in order to keep other people from possibly getting sick disappeared. Once a vaccine was available, no one willing to take it could be infected by anyone. That's the theory. If the vaccine does what it is claimed to do, that's what it means. Once it's available, no one willing to take it can be infected by anyone. All claims of anyone's duty to others evaporates at that point. Once that vaccine is available, person A could only catch a dose of the corona from person B by virtue of person A's own decision to forego the vaccine. Person B can be put under no obligation to sacrifice his or her own liberties of dress and movement and what have you in order to spare person A from the consequences of his or her own decision. By the same token, the theoretical proposition that the host of unvaccinated folks might have the virus persist in circulating amongst them has no valid public policy dimensions, any more than the fact that hikers and other folks who enjoy the outdoors thereby inescapably put themselves at risk of Lyme disease, spotted fever, West Nile virus, Zika, malaria, and so forth. These risks are freely chosen and no business of the state. And I will throw in here the parenthetic note that there is a tiny handful of people who are medically unable to get vaccinated, but that can't be a factor that dictates impositions on all of the rest of society. Those folks, unfortunately, they gotta, if necessary, become bubble people, or at least, you know, gear themselves up with the personal protective equipment, such as to protect themselves, or stay home and stay safe. That's just a fact. In short, there's no rational or defensible reason for anyone to be compelled or pressured or expected to wear a mask or to social distance at all, vaccinated or unvaccinated, and there never was one. From the very beginning. And that all, frankly, is based on the actual science of the COVID-19 and its history, which is a lot different, I think, than what most people imagine. Certainly, it's a lot different than what people are fed by mainstream media sources. I want to recommend a website that people can go to get that actual history of both the COVID virus and the reactions to it. You can find that at losthorizons.com/THS.htm17. Okay, that's a bookmark number. So losthorizons.com/THS.htm17 with the THS all capped. There certainly is no reason for any of this stuff now, just as there never was to begin with. Anyone fearful of the virus is able to preemptively protect themselves from any inadvertent meetings with the Typhoid Marys by which they imagine themselves to be surrounded. The distinction between vaccinated and unvaccinated is bogus. It's just there, frankly, in an effort, a continuing effort to incentivize or coerce, kind of, I don't know, mentally coerce people who have not yet gotten the vaccine to do so. And, you know, one has to wonder why on earth that continues to be an interest to anyone. Again, when all those who have reason to fear or choose to fear COVID-19 can get vaccinated against it, whether anyone else does is completely irrelevant. So moving on a bit, but still on the COVID-19 subject, I want to make this another point. one of the things that that seems to have disappeared from the news cycle last week, which is a very important item, is the publication of research by a fellow named Nicholas Wade. He's a science writer and editor and author who has worked on the staff of Nature, Science, and also the New York Times, who assembled and connected the dots concerning Anthony Fauci's funding of gain-of-function enhancement of an isolated animal virus to become a particularly contagious human crossover pathogen at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The publication of this paper was announced last week. This story of Anthony Fauci's financing of the gain of function of what is pretty clearly the COVID-19 virus appeared on the radar screen in a few places last week and then vanished, and it has largely continued to be vanished. There are a few news outlets that are still carrying some sorts of stories about it, but it is not showing up on most people's screens. But it should. This is a very, very important story. The evidence seems pretty clear. I'm not prepared to you know, vouch for any of it. I haven't done the research personally myself, but it seems pretty clear that the very fellow that has been haranguing Americans for a year now about things to do in response to this virus appears to have possibly had a very strong hand in the creation of this virus. And also appears to be lying about it at this point. Again, not saying that definitively, but that has been said by Rand Paul, for instance, U.S. Senator Rand Paul, who questioned Anthony Fauci in the direction of this subject last week, but didn't quite get to a finish. Now we're coming up on a break here. I can hear from the bumper music, so I'm going to let this go at this point, and I'll take it back up again when we get back on the other side. So stay tuned, people. This is an interesting story.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Spring is here, and so are your allergies. That's why we have Quercetin at a 15% discount, available at thepowermall.com. Quercetin, it's a potent antioxidant to support immunity and normal allergen response. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys. Buy from thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. 15% off Quercetin, this month only at thepowermall.com.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
If you eat your man of food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Okay, we're back. I want to encourage everyone to remember the Power Mall. Great place for getting products. You can visit it at thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829 to order Monday through Friday 8 to 4 Central Time. Great place, great products. You should check it out. Back to what I was speaking of when before the break here, the recent assemblage of data pointing to Anthony Fauci as being the a key factor in the production of the creation and production of the COVID-19 virus. It seems self-evident to me that this is a subject that ought to be of great interest to all Americans, indeed to the entire world, and yet it is not. It is a subject being suppressed. I wonder myself whether or not the publication of the information that Nicholas Wade, who I was introducing you to before the break, in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists last week, I wonder if the publication of that information may not have been even a factor in the CDC's new, you know, take off your mask and go back to normal guidance. Certainly, it is a safer thing for people responsible for this this virus, if there are any that are actually responsible. It's safer for them that this no longer be a burr under the saddle of the American people, to which they are paying a great deal of attention and directing a great deal of ire. Better for them that everyone be relieved of those of that itch and that interest and distracted with an effort to, you know, try and restore the financial health, social health, you know, the norms with which we all grew up as much as possible. Could be. Anyway, that's purely speculative. The main point, though, is this information has been assembled. It has been published. One interesting thing about it that I want to make very much make a point of is the fact that the funding, the involvement of Fauci in part, at least, was in funding the activities of the Wuhan Institute of Virology, from which the news of COVID-19 first emanated back in late 2019, and arguably or perhaps from which the first incidences of the of anyone infected with the virus issued forth in around that same time. This funding, however, was not done by a direct, you know, check written to the Wuhan Institute of Virology by Anthony Fauci's National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Instead, it was paid from that organization through another organization, a cutout in a way, called EcoHealth Alliance. And EcoHealth Alliance then conveyed the money to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And this is significant in part because Anthony Fauci was questioned about this subject, about his involvement in financing the gain-of-function enhancements built into the COVID-19 virus, or purportedly built into the COVID-19 virus. And he denied, when questioned, he denied that the NIAID had ever financed gain-of-function research. And technically, as it turns out, that's true. NIAID did not directly finance this. And the way that Fauci put it was such as to make a it all depends on what the meaning of is kind of a legal dodge out of the answer, because, again, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases did not directly send a check to Wuhan. They sent it to EcoHealth Alliance instead, and EcoHealth Alliance then passed it on to the Wuhan Institute. Unfortunately, when Rand Paul was questioning Fauci about this in a congressional hearing last week, Paul did not know about the EcoHealth Alliance link. And so Fauci was able to get away with answering the questions. Nope, we never funded that. We never did that. And it was obvious looking at the way that he was doing it that he was being, or it seemed obvious to me anyway, that he was being cagey about this. But unfortunately, Rand Paul didn't know to say, but didn't you give the money to EcoHealth Alliance, who then gave it to Wuhan on your instructions. And there actually has even been, I think, an email that has surfaced since then of the NIAID, or maybe Fauci himself, instructing the head of the EcoHealth Alliance to stop funding the gain of function research. Kind of bit of a smoking gun on the subject, I believe. So anyway, there's pretty good evidence here that this is what has gone on, that Fauci has a lot of involvement in this research. Certainly, it was involvement in gain of function research of some virus, whether it was the one that ended up, you know, erupting as COVID-19 or not, or being, you know, labeled COVID-19. Is almost beside the point, because if it wasn't that, then it's research for gain of function. Gain of function, by the way, I don't know if I covered this in sufficient detail. Gain of function is the enhancement of a virus to become more contagious, and in some cases, and in this particular case, to be capable of crossing over from animal hosts to human hosts, again, with more contagion. So gain of function research is a bad thing at all times, it seems to me, whether it is or was involved in enhancing the what became the COVID-19 virus, or if it was being devoted to enhancing some other virus of which we've not yet heard. It's still a bad thing. It all ought to stop. And the only way that that's going to happen, I think, is if a lot of attention is paid to what went on here, to the information that Nicholas Wade has published in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, and to, you know, functioning as a deterrent to people that might want to do this. And NIAID made these gifts to the Wuhan Institute of Virology for the purpose of gain of function research using taxpayer dollars, using American taxpayer dollars. So it's your money that is financing it, our money that is financing this stuff. And I don't think we want anyone doing this. I really don't. I think that the people who have done it need to be stopped and need to be denounced and need to be punished for it to the degree that it constituted crimes, which I think it absolutely must have in one way or another. In any event, they need to be denounced and deterred from anyone else ever doing this sort of thing in the future. So I want to encourage everyone to help keep this subject on the national radar screen. Very, very important stuff. And again, the name of the researcher there is Nicholas Wade. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists is where the his paper was recently published last week. You can look those things up and find that paper and read it for yourself. Videos of Rand Paul's questioning of Anthony Fauci are online. I saw at least one on Fox News' site, and I'm sure that searching YouTube for Rand Paul and Anthony Fauci and confining it to the last 10 days, you'll find those videos. Very interesting stuff. So, moving on with just a couple more things of a topical nature, and then we're going to get into the income tax subject. So those waiting for that, bear with me, but these other things are important as well. So here's another thing that was in the news this past week. It was the ruling by Facebook's pretentiously labeled Supreme Court to continue Facebook's ban on Donald Trump for another 6 months for the supposed offense of using the Facebook platform to incite people to violence. And, I have said many times, and I don't want anyone to ever make this mistake, I'm not a partisan Don Trump fan. I think that he was better than Hillary Clinton as a choice in 2016. His performance in office, excuse me, did not thrill me at all. Still would rather have him there than Joe Biden, to be perfectly frank, just based on Joe Biden's performance in office so far, which I think has been disastrous. But I'm not a Donald Trump partisan. So anything that I say on this, in a topic that involves him is not an endorsement for him. But it's irrelevant because what is being talked about here is what is right and what is wrong and truth and versus lies. And those things are important no matter who is involved. So here's what I have to say about the Facebook ruling. I think that one of the things that has mystified a lot of people is the reasoning with Facebook in its discussing Trump as having incited violence when everyone who has seen what Trump said sees that he really didn't incite violence at all. He never told anyone to do anything violent. In fact, he did exactly the opposite. He told the people in Washington January 6th. When all this incitement to violence supposedly took place, he told them to go home. He said, go home peacefully. That's all he said. He never said storm the Capitol. He never said do anything like that. But what Facebook is characterizing as incitement, I believe, is this. Trump reminded people. He reminded the people in that speech that he gave and in the tweets that he put out in the Facebook post that for which he is condemned. He reminded people of a grievance over which it's reasonable to assume those people are likely to become angry. Conceivably having become angry and because of the nature of the offense, in this case, Trump was talking about a stolen election and the disenfranchisement of all those people to whom he was speaking. It's reasonable to assume that maybe some of them would become so angry as to act out. And and do something. But that's it. Trump can't be accused of any actual call to violence. He didn't do it. But in the eyes of those whose ox he's goring by speaking of the things that he says that they did, the offenses that he says that they committed against the people to whom he's speaking, just the naming of those offenses can be seen as amounting to a call for violence. Okay, that reasoning is a problem, obviously. Under that formula, no one could call anyone out for anything, especially any offense with a broad impact. I mean, that would, eliminate the criticism of government policy, for instance, or any number of other, you know, speech problems. So it's a problem by itself, just to begin with. But leaving that problem aside, there's another problem as well, and that is the hypocrisy of formula and conclusion on the part of the Facebook people, Twitter, and so forth. Twitter does not have Trump. Well, I don't know if they have him banned right now or not, actually. I don't know that. They have done so in the past. So I'm going to lump them in with Facebook here. They're certainly guilty of the same deplatforming offenses that Facebook is, whether with regard to Trump or other people. So Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and the Democrats that celebrate all these things, there's a hypocrisy problem there. And this is what that is. All of those people endlessly assert the commission of great crimes themselves by people like Trump and those who stand in his camp. Those voices, the Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, the voices that they tolerate, and the Democrats that make up some of those voices and that support them, devote a huge amount of their time, in fact, to accusing mainstream of America of being systemically racist and guilty of grave crimes, not just in the past, but right now, against all manner of alleged victims. And in fact, not only might those supposed victims be thereby incited to violence, as, you know, supposedly the Trump speech attendees might have been, but many of them actually did do it. They took up bricks and the torch last summer and caused a few $1 billion in damages in cities across the country, along with a bunch of casualties. I mean, a bunch of wounded and some dead people. So they actually did the violence that the reminder of grievance, or the assertion of grievance anyway, was assumed to produce. And yet those people are never suppressed. They're never accused of incitement, and they're never deplatformed by Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. And they're actively celebrated by Democrats, a lot of Democrats anyway, many of whom marched with the disgruntled accusers and even knelt to them in a nauseating display, which surely encouraged the domestic terrorism that they proceeded to engage in throughout the course of, you know, much of last summer. So I think that hypocrisy is a problem. I think that it's another thing that would be good for Americans to keep on the public radar screen going forward. Hypocrisy is a bad thing. So one last item on that subject then too, and that is this. I think that it is safe to say that no content moderation should be permitted on social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and so forth. I know I'm, you know, far from the first voice to say that. It's been being said for a long, long time. I bring it up partly because the experience with the Trump ban being, you know, continued for another 6 months makes it current. And also I think I bring it up because I think a lot of people don't understand the Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act that is being used manipulatively to allow for this content censoring, this moderation, as it is called. So to clarify, Section 230 is the section of law behind which online platforms like Facebook and Twitter crouch when exercising censorship of content disfavored by their owners. Technically, Section 230 provides that online platform owners shall not be treated as publishers and therefore not be deemed liable for the content posted on the platforms by others, that is, by subscribers. The idea behind the section was actually to relieve platform owners of the need to moderate content for which they might otherwise be held liable, as would be a publisher printing libels and slanders. But the section has been turned on its head thus far without meaningful pushback, as just a do what you want, censor whatever you want, even though you behave like a publisher, picking and choosing content allowed on the platform rather than just transmitting it like a utility, you're indemnified anyway. And this needs to change, because that really is turning the law on its head. The idea of sparing platform owners the need to moderate is being used as a license to moderate without accountability. So keep that one in mind too, people, please. And this leads me to one last thing on the tech front, after which we're gonna head towards the tax subject. And that is this, the vulnerability of critical infrastructure to hack attacks. This is on everyone's mind right now because of the Colonial Pipeline shutdown we had last week And here's my response to that. Take critical infrastructure systems offline, period. This seems like an obvious takeaway, and it has seemed the epitome of common sense for decades. But it's not done. It isn't the way it is right now. The only reason the Colonial Pipeline system could be shut down by hackers is that it is set up to allow an operator of some kind to turn things on and off or otherwise manipulate them while sitting at home in his pajamas. That's it. That system could be completely invulnerable to hackers by simply being designed to require a physical person on the scene to push the buttons and pull the levers of a wholly compartmentalized offline control system. There's nothing hard about this. Monitoring equipment could be online, but without any operational interface. Actual control of the system should be in person. No more vulnerability, and only at the cost of a little less convenience for the operators. Now, the internet age, it's a wonderful thing, but that doesn't mean that it is wise to route through the net anything and everything that can be so routed. Some things are best left old school. We don't need a massive state apparatus purporting to protect us from cybercrime, which is impossible to do in any case. We just need to apply a little common sense. So that's my take on stuff in the news right now. I'm going to move next hour into the subject of the income tax. I'm going to start it right now. I want to tell people, you know, it's tax day today, quote unquote. It isn't really. This is actually just filing day. Filing day used to be tax day. It used to be when people who had done taxable things not only made the declaration of those activities and a self-assessment of the tax that would arise on them, but also wrote the check to the IRS or to the other tax agencies. This changed for most folks when withholding was put in place. Broad-based withholding was put in place in 1943, actually just a resumption of a practice that had been in place from 1862 up till 1916. But it was resumed in 1943. It was done in such a fashion as to cause most people to imagine that it applied much more broadly than it actually does as a legal matter, taking advantage of the distraction of World War II, which we were in the midst of. And at that point, tax day became every payday. Those are the days when the money's taken. Those are the days when the taxes are put into escrow, technically. They aren't collected and, you know, dropped in the bank by the governments involved. And they, you know, they wait until the filing day when a filer declares what is or is not the income that was received during the course of the previous year. Most people, having no idea of the real nature of the income tax, just declare that everything that they were paid qualifies. And then that money goes from the escrow account straight into the U.S. Treasury's bank account, with maybe a little bit of excess that is found to have been collected, returned in the form of a refund, which everybody on the receiving end celebrates as, you know, some kind of big birthday party event. Even though the fact is that what's being kept is a far greater amount. So again, though, you know, technically we're going to call this tax day, good day for talking about the income tax. And here's the thing that needs to be said about that subject. The income tax is a broadly misunderstood subject by most Americans. The income tax is an excise tax. It's a federal excise tax, went into effect first in 1862, has remained in effect ever since, with the exception of a period between 1895, when a Supreme Court ruling effectively halted its operation for a period of time until the American people overruled that Supreme Court decision with the 16th Amendment and restored the income tax, because it was, when properly, when, you know, by those who understand it, the income tax is a very, very good, desirable tax. And back in 1913, Americans knew that. And so they acted to amend the Constitution to revive the income tax, allow it to continue to operate, and we have had it ever since. But increasingly over the course of time from 1913 on, understanding of the tax became more and more vague for very deliberate reasons. It was made to be less well understood over the course of time, and then in 1943 in the current Tax Payment Act, We had withholding begin and the obfuscation of the facts of the tax grew even more comprehensive. Okay, that takes us up to 2003. And in 2003, after doing research for several years, I discovered the actual nature of the tax and how it is misapplied and everything else that most people need to know about the subject. And I published that material in a book called Cracking the Code, The Fascinating Truth About Taxation in America. And at that point, what now amount to tens, possibly hundreds of thousands of Americans began reclaiming all of the improperly collected amounts taken from them under the rubric of the income tax, including Social Security and Medicare, by the way, and state taxes and local taxes. It's been going on now for 17 years, more than 17 years. Hundreds of thousands of claims made by Americans across the country, billions of dollars returned. We'll talk more about all this interesting stuff when we come back.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods, Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? ThePowerMall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at ThePowerMall.com today.